Hello, welcome to Studio One. If you like what you see, like and subscribe and comment. Hello, welcome to Studio One. I'm your host, Jabril Osman. Today we are interviewing Theo Vandenhoff. He is a Toronto artist. And more importantly, I want to reiterate that Studio One is a platform where I interview artists around the world, but most importantly, interviewing local acts in Toronto. Being said, we're going to start. Theo, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Jabril.
Great. Now, before we really get started, Theo, can you just briefly introduce yourself, and then we'll just get started.
Yeah, I'm Theo Vandenhoff. I am the founding member of the act Theo Vandenhoff, which is now a four-piece band, but started off as a sort of bedroom synth-pop project and has evolved into more of a fully-fledged post-punk act.
Great. Thank you so much, man. So, to get started, I know from listening to your music and reading about you, you weren't really musically in the beginning, like music wasn't really jumping out towards you. I think your dad kind of was into music. He was a part of groups, and that's kind of where you got your early musical inspiration, I would say. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I didn't have a musical upbringing in the traditional sense of people whose parents are musicians in a like classically trained sense. I didn't grow up around theory or people who were actively making music all the time, but my dad, and it's specifically my mom as well, but my dad specifically was a very passionate music nerd, huge on like the 80s post-punk scene, synth pop, all that kind of stuff. He was in a synth pop band himself called The Invisible College, and that he did that through a lot of the 80s. So I grew up listening to a lot of that music, and it, being like a really passionate music listener, I was always focused more on other things until I became a teenager and started making music myself.
Yeah, exactly. And when it comes to, music or anything in the creative field, even coming from me, like when it comes to writing, it starts off as a hobby, but then you really enjoy it, and then you kind of think, maybe I could see a path here. At what age do you think music became more than a hobby, where you felt like maybe you started making early songs, or you're showing your dad some ideas? Like, at what age do you think you started getting that in your mind?
Well, yeah, so essentially what happened is I was in pretty deep within like the competitive soccer world in Ontario. I was a goalkeeper. I was doing it every single day of the week and like flying up for tournaments in the States and like playing League One call-ups and doing stuff like that. I was like going to like showcase tournaments, trying to get scouted for schools in the United States, for like university, like D1, D2 university teams. And then something changed when I started a band in high school and ended, made some really, really bad music with a couple of my friends that I hope never sees the light of day. But I really, really enjoyed it. And it felt like an outlet that I didn't have when I was constantly in an environment where I felt like I was sort of stripped of my individuality and my vulnerability with the sort of toxic masculine environment that competitive sports is. That when I was 16, we went out for a showcase, like a university showcase tournament in Florida, and I came back and decided that that's not what I wanted to pursue, and I stopped playing soccer so that I would have more time to make music.
Yeah.
And yeah, my coach begged me to come back to the team for like a year straight after that, but I stuck to it, and now this is all I want to do.
Yeah. And on that note too, then it must have been special for you. I kind of want to get the chronological kind of order of that. I know you released your first record 2021. Yeah. I would say, at what point did you make the switch from soccer to music? Do you think there was kind of a period, or I want to know what that was kind of like when you fully dived into it?
I think after I stopped playing competitive sports, there was sort of a burnout period where I'd been going so hard with that for so long that I all of a sudden had this freedom I hadn't had before. And as like a teenager, I started going to a lot of parties and experimenting with a lot of drugs and not really doing music so much as just like rebelling against this like strict structure that I had been in before. But now that I think it got to a point where I was like, I was writing music, I wasn't doing anything with it, and I was sort of owning my skills at that point, trying to figure out what kind of music I wanted to write, what I wanted to do. It took me a couple of years to figure that out. And I played in a couple bands in high school, but they were all mostly just like crappy alt rock bands, and we just did a lot of covers and didn't really ever release any original material. And then I decided to start writing on my own. I wrote the last song on my first EP, Undertones, I think towards the end of high school, and then we re-recorded that a couple years later for the first EP. And that was sort of around when I started to learn how to use synthesizers, drum machines, that kind of thing, sort of really hyper-fixated on that and learned a lot. And we recorded that first EP. Me and my colleague Jay recorded that first EP when I was 19. For the most part, sat on it for a bit. The pandemic happened.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like it was ever gonna end, because I wanted to get a couple shows under my belt before I released it, but didn't really get the opportunity to do that. So we just sort of were like, all right, might as well release this. We've been sitting on it for too long. Got like a local artist collective called Safe Sounds. Will and Dez at Safe Sounds were really helpful with sort of getting me to integrate into the Toronto's local scene, meet people, and it just sort of snowballed from there. I got some pretty good local response to that first EP, and like our first few performances captivated people, I think, and we've just been riding that momentum ever since.
Yeah. And touching on that too, from your perspective, I think when it comes to Toronto, and me being a music journalist, I think there's, especially in the years that I've been on this come up, there's a lot of real focus on R&B and rap, and I know we have such an amazing local music scene when it comes to rock, alt rock, the music that you make. Going into the idea of, okay, I'm gonna be an artist, I'm gonna make records in Toronto, tell me what it's like for you in terms of the idea that like you toured in Europe, your influence in music are so enamored in kind of this 80s kind of like Joy Division kind of essence, right? A lot of your what draws me to your music is so much of, you're from Toronto, but a lot of your records and a lot of your influences take from other places. So when it comes to your music, I think, can you kind of describe it stylistically and kind of the creative direction you've been going towards since your first EP?
Yeah, I think, I mean, to touch on that, our first, well, pretty much all the music I listen to is like a lot of music from the UK, from the 80s, a lot of European, like that German EBM scene and like the Belgian new beat and that kind of stuff. Like, there are a lot of fantastic Canadian bands from that period, like Rational Youth and Psyche, and a lot of bands that, because they were Canadian, don't really get the credit they deserve. But like the music that we make, I think, is better understood by people in the UK and Europe, and those are sort of demographics that I would much rather have an audience with than Canada, quite frankly, because I think that's a pretty unanimous goal for most Canadian artists. You can try to tackle Canada as a market as much as you want, but Canada's so small, and it's a lot harder to break out of that than it is to just like become a CanCon artist and get all these factor grants and only ever really be known within Canada.
And to touch on that too, you know, it's not even so Canadian too. Like, you know, you watch Bohemian Rhapsody, you see the biopic, you see how excited they get on the idea that they landed a U.S. tour, because the U.S. is so massive. So it's just, understanding bigger music markets and things like that. Touch upon the tour, talk to me how that came about, and also, how did you come, because you said like soccer and all of that kind of stripped you from your identity and the toxic masculinity of all that. Can you touch upon how you got used to performing on stage? Because I've seen, and I can't wait to see your show this week, but I've seen you perform and there's such like an energetic energy to it. You know, the songs kind of hit harder like live. It seems like a lot of the songs you make are really intended for that live experience. Talk to me about performing to audiences non-Canada, and also where you have built the confidence to perform like the way you do. That's when I first heard like Rosetta, and I saw the video and I saw you perform. I saw like there's such a stage presence in your music, and again, it's such a, I want to say it's a rarity, but especially when you're in Toronto and Canada, it's not something you see too often. There's like the true artistry in that. Can you touch on that?
Well, I find it really funny when that comes across as confidence, because to me, it's, and I guess like, there's a lot of vulnerability in that, but it's just sort of an impulse. It's a release. Yeah. And it feels like all these mannerisms and movements and sounds that I feel like I have to repress in my day-to-day life, and these things that I ball up inside of me can all come out of me at once over the span of like half an hour to an hour on stage. And I really, really enjoy it. I live for it, and doing those 23 shows in the UK over 35 days was an incredible experience, and so I just got to go and do that every night. And just being able to have that release for me is incredibly important, which I think is like, it doesn't always come across that way to everyone, because obviously not everyone can understand what it's like from my perspective, or not everyone understands. Not everyone's a huge fan of like the really maximalist sort of high energy showmanship style performance. If people don't have specific points of reference either, like I heard comments from some of the shows we were playing in the UK where like a couple people walked out to the smoking area in one of the shows that we were playing, and the other band we were playing with heard them say like, oh, he's trying so hard to be Mick Jagger, which I find really funny, because I take absolutely no influence from Mick Jagger. Which is a comparison I get sometimes from people who don't have as much of like a point of reference to the music that I really like, and more sort of like a classic rock point of reference. So yeah, trying so hard to be Mick Jagger. It's funny too, because I feel like I would have to try harder to not do that. Yeah. You know? And that's sort of the point.
And from the sense that I get when it comes to your music, when I get the sense when it comes to, you know, the art directions in your videos, I think it seems like you're so confident in what you're doing. I get the sense that even if you heard, you know, kind of compliments or even good comments or bad comments, I think you'd still do what you want to do. So that kind of takes me to In the Throes of Love. Talk to me about how this new record came about and tell me how, because usually when it comes to new records, you know, you'll have an artist working on it for a year or 2 years, maybe less than that. It goes to the fans. We kind of interpret it the way we want to. From your perspective, because we're talking after it's been released, tell me about what the record means to you and what the reception's been like.
And The Throes of Love, the thing about it is that as the name suggests, it was sort of written in between two different relationships I've had, and it sort of like the idea was that these five songs would sort of cover each cover a different facet of love or relationships or and that each one would sort of tackle a different theme. Yeah. Within that, some of it's the just the pure bliss of being in love and new love and young love, and some of it's the fear that comes with that, and like the anxiety of making yourself vulnerable to all this pain and potential heartbreak. Yeah. And then there's obviously like a sexually charged aspect to some of it as well. That was the idea with the EP from my perspective, is that it's all songs written about different experiences, like the throes of love that yeah. I've been through. I wrote them from like a very personal standpoint, and there's some very like specific details of my personal relationships in there, but in a way that I like to write things that they're interpretable enough that other people can relate to them and pull their own meaning yeah. to their own from their own specific circumstances to apply to that as well. From the feedback I've heard, I think it was relatively successful in doing that for the people that connected with it, that's really what it means. What means most to me about writing is hearing the different interpretations of the songs that we've written from different people, and them each pulling their own meanings, and even noticing different things about it that are insightful to my own experience that other people don't notice. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And going on that too, when it comes to releasing a record, I know you have your release show this week. When it comes to performing, would you say that out of the songwriting, out of making the record, would you say that performing the songs live is kind of where you feel the most you, or do you love the songwriting too?
It's interesting, because when I wrote that first EP, we had never performed live before. I had never performed my own music live before, really. So the thought with that was that was essentially just like a songwriting and production experiment for me, and the songs sort of, as we started to perform them live, they sort of evolved. And now with this new EP, we had that a lot more in mind, is how these songs would translate live, being played by a band. I'm also very much of the mind that a studio recording and listening to a studio recording should translate to a different experience than the live experience, yeah. and that not everything on the recording necessarily has to be the same. Like when I perform live, I'll strain my voice a bit more. I'll accentuate different lines because they feel like they work with the energy of the room better at some times. We'll have different parts played on different instruments sometimes. We'll do like extended intros to some of them and stuff that just wouldn't translate as well to the studio recordings. Yeah. That comes across as more potent within a live setting. So there's a difference between those two things.
And to add to that too, I think a marker of a really good artist is when the live recordings or the live performances sort of outmatch, like you said, the headphone experience, the car experience. It's almost like the song has a new life to it when you see it live. And then it's almost the idea that, yeah, you're going to a concert, you're experiencing something new. And I think when it comes to the videos that I've seen of you performing, I can see like your body movements. You know, it's very like Ian Curtis Destroy Division in terms of just this energy. That's why I'm so excited to see you perform live, because I think it elevates, you know, and I'm excited to see the records that you've released live elevate itself on a stage. Yeah. So, got a couple of questions left here. For an artist who relatively, you have a couple of years under your belt, to have the experience of touring, being an opening act, releasing two EPs, you got the release show this week. Looking ahead, as an artist and as you've learned, you know, the ups and downs through it, where do you think your energy is now solely going towards? Is it, I need more shows, I need to do more of that? Are you currently working on a new EP? Like, how do you see the rest of the year kind of flowing for you?
Well, I'm of the mind, specifically with our stuff, where I think our music resonates with people the most, and the music I write and that we perform resonates with people the most when they do see it live. So we're looking at doing a couple more tours this year, hopefully going back to the UK in the fall. It's also just what I enjoy doing most, and I like writing the songs. There's something really nice about sitting down with a notebook and a cup of coffee and writing poetry and lyrics, and I enjoy doing that, and I enjoy being in the studio and experimenting with all of that. But I think the payoff of that is being able to play those shows live, and like the tour we did in November, being able to go to the UK and like share this like product of our creative labor with, you know, hundreds of people and people who quite often in our situation right now don't know the songs before they hear them, and then they come out with these connections to them, and like hearing people tell me that, like, oh, that they'd never heard the song we performed before, but it like brought them to tears when they saw it live, and that happened a couple times, and that was incredible. Like, I have never been given the opportunity to feel that fulfilled in something that I've done before, and yeah, just see people's reactions to that firsthand and feed off of their energy. And that's my favorite part of it. And we're definitely looking to do more of that this year. We've started demoing for an album. We'll be shopping around to some labels. But for now, we're still an independent, yeah, unsigned, self-managed artist, and quite intentionally, until something opportune arises. So I'm looking forward to, I mean, there's a lot of the year to go, and I'm sure lots is going to happen, so looking forward to see what that might be.
Awesome. Now, one more question. Usually I like to ask like a question about kind of advice or looking back or any of these things. I kind of just, as the conversation flows, I kind of think of the last question. So for you, I think, you know, with growing up playing, you know, soccer and really being immersed in that, knowing where you are now in terms of you've done a tour, you've released two records in this music world, looking back, if you could go back to Theo who was playing soccer, and that Theo was interested in music and thinking, I'm going to go this way, what's something you've learned along this journey so far in terms of really becoming a musician, and something if you could go back you would tell your younger self? I'd love to hear that.
I think that I would tell myself to be, especially starting off as a songwriter, to be a lot less afraid of what other people will think about my own personal creative expression, and that a lot of the stuff that I was going to write and a lot of the experimentation with writing music and beginning to have that creative outlet, it's not going to be good, you know? Yeah. It's just like starting out doing anything else. And I think that is something that still slows me down and sort of discourages me, is when I spend a lot of time making something and I'm not happy with it, and I have to learn to be less of a perfectionist in the way that I do things and create music, and otherwise, you know, like I'm not someone that really regrets any decision I've ever made in my life. I'm like, have a very holistic view of that, where like that wherever I was in the past is where I needed to be where I am now. So it's hard to say. I don't even know if I'd want to say anything to myself, because I don't even know if as a teenager my future self came back and told me that shit, I don't even know if I would listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd probably just tell myself to fuck off. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Okay, and final question. If you had to play one song the rest of your life and you were content with that just one song, what would it be?
If I could play one song, does it have to be my song?
It could be.
That I've written? My favorite song to do at karaoke is Dirty Old Town by the Pogues. And I think that's just such a unifying folk song that I could probably hear that song and sing that song over and over for the rest of my life, and it would always, I don't think you'd ever suck all of its emotional potency out of it. I would, if I had to perform only one of my songs for the rest of my life, I don't know how long my life would be. but Dirty Old Town. I mean, it's not original. It's not originally a Pogues song. It's but the Pogues version is the one that I love. Yeah.
Cool. Studio One.